We're wandering with a fellow named Teagarden. Sam Teagarden, a math professor and hero of the thriller Flight of the Fox. And there's something familiar about this terrain for those of us here in northeastern Pennsylvania and the southern tier of New York. He was moving in a generally northern direction. That was fine because it was the opposite direction from the truck with the sniper. Other than that, he had no idea where he was going, where he'd emerge from the woods, or if he'd emerge at all. Nothing was certain. This was Sullivan County, where unexplored virgin forest and the Catskill Mountains go on for many scores of miles. It was nearly like the land beyond beyond. Much of the terrain was impassable because bluestone slate erupted everywhere in slabs as large as houses. Every tree in the woods had to grow around it or push up under it, which posed a danger of precipitous drops, mini cliffs coated with moss where the slightest stumble could result in broken bones. Having already survived a car crash that broke both legs at the knees, he did not care to repeat the experience. And at night, forget it. Not even hunters ventured through these woods after dusk, except four-legged predators. In the woods of Sullivan County, the coyotes owned the night. After a few minutes, Teagarden left his cozy alcove, took a reading on the sun as best he could, and began hiking north. It was the direction he felt confident would eventually lead to Route 17, the main state highway that cut through the lower Catskill Mountains. If he got lucky, maybe he could hitch a ride out of the county. When the wooded path finally emerged at a road, the result was not a four-lane highway as hoped, but a short dirt road that dead-ended in one direction and T-boned at a narrow paved road about 200 yards in the other direction. He stepped from the tractor path onto the dirt road. No, it can't be! He stood in the lonely intersection shaded by arching greenery. It's not possible, he shouted. What alarmed him loomed a half mile in the distance. It was a giant parking lot. What's more, he knew it was just one of many giant parking lots linked by a circular road that looped farther in the distance. It meant he was only about a mile from the Bethel Woods Arts Center, where the amphitheater and museum now stood on the grounds of the old Woodstock Music Festival, where he was born while Country Joe was on stage in 1969.
Give me an F!
Yeah!
Give me an I!
I!
Give me an S!
Yes!
Give me an H!
Yes!
What's that spell?
Teagarden could practically see the hillside where he was prematurely born in a makeshift tent to a mother lying on her back in the muddy earth as if she were a member of an enormous tribe of hunter-gatherers. He was never certain of the precise spot. His mom could only say that it was halfway up the hill and to the right of the stage. Highlights from the thriller Flight of the Fox by Gray Basnight. Basnight is deeply immersed in writing fiction after almost three decades in broadcast news as a writer, editor, producer, and reporter. His other published novels are The Cop with the Pink Pistol, a modern detective mystery, and Shadows in the Fire, a Civil War historical novel about two young slaves on the edge of freedom as Richmond falls in April 1896. Gray and his wife divide their time between Sullivan County, New York, and New York City. As it happens, the staff at the Bethel Woods Center is preparing to launch a special exhibition titled We Are Golden in March. The exhibit will use the 1969 Woodstock Music and Art Fair as a metaphor for the tumult and human response of the entire decade of the 60s in hope that young people today will be able to draw inspiration and articulate what it is that they want from their own world in our time. In a certain sense, Gray Bosnight may be evoking the 1969 Woodstock Festival in Flight of the Fox to raise some of those same questions. Mindy Cronk, WVIA production associate and avid reader, had a chance to speak by phone with Gray Bosnight to learn more about this mystery.
Flight of the Fox is a run for your life political thriller. And it slots even more specifically onto the bookshelf that may be called Paranoid Thriller because it has conspiratorial background going on with the 1960s. The story is basically about an everyman, in this case a mathematics professor named Sam Teagarden, who suddenly has to go on the run for his life. And while he's on the run from the Catskills area of New York State to New York City and then Washington and finally Key West, he discovers that he has this mysterious message in his email inbox, and it's encrypted. Well, because he's a math professor and he knows a little bit about encryption, he's worked with it in the past, he gradually decodes this mysterious message while he's on the run, and he finds out it's a diary, and every diary begins with the word Dear John. Well, John happens to be none other than John Edgar Hoover. So he realizes this is a diary, and it's written by J. Edgar Hoover's lifetime partner and lover, a man who really existed in the FBI. His name is Clyde Anderson Tolton. Okay, the fact that it's a diary and that there are some personal aspects to it is not significant. What is significant is the diary tangentially reveals that the FBI committed many dark crimes in the 1930s, 40s, 50s, and 60s. It is, of course, fiction. I feel obligated to emphasize that. Of course, it's a novel, and therefore it's complete fiction. But the 60s and 70s were my formative years. And I'll never forget those days when we lost President Kennedy, Senator Kennedy, and a great civil rights leader named Dr. King. And I've just never felt that we know the truth. I'm not a big conspiracy buff. I don't obsess about other possibilities. But the one thing I am certain of is we just, as Americans in a democratic republic, just don't know everything that we're entitled to know.
What prompted you to write a story like this?
I was searching for the chance to write an alternative history novel that would fit in the thriller slot. And when this came along, I thought, well, that's it. This is the sort of alternative history that might be fun in the same spirit as one of the writers that I idolize. His name is Ken Follett. And Mr. Follett wrote Eye of the Needle about the Normandy invasion and another wonderful sort of alternative thriller called The Key to Rebecca about the North African campaign. Of course, both of them centering on World War II. But I was hoping to try my hand at that because as a writer, I'm working in different genres. My first novel, The Cop with the Pink Pistol, was a police procedural and a bit of a romance and a bit of a humor novel. And then I wrote a historical set in the Civil War. And when it came time to write this thriller, I was just exploring the genre and tried to do my best with this subject matter.
And the story includes Woodstock and Bethel, New York, an event and location our listeners are very familiar with.
Oh, yes. The opening scene or the opening conspiracy scene and action scene is in Woodstock. You know, although I live in New York City, Mindy, I'm lucky enough to have a house in the foothills of the Catskills. And so I drive past the town of Bethel frequently. And Bethel is, of course, the location where in August 1969, something like 400,000 young men and women gathered for something called the Woodstock Rock Festival. Well, the 50th anniversary is coming up in August of 2019. And so in my novel, I thought, what a wonderful thing to peg the opening to if I set the story in August of 2019. And I thought that would resonate with the readers because not everybody knows about Bethel, but everybody knows about Woodstock. And in fact, that is a world-famous story. And I think it was kind of fun for leaders to realize that 50 years on, it's still kind of an important date where politically active and savvy young men and women use their First Amendment rights in the form of music and protest to petition their government for a redress of grievance about something called Vietnam, that little war we had that lasted 10 years back in those years.
You had mentioned that the story moves from the Woodstock area, the Catskill area, to New York, Washington. There's a scene at the Central Park Zoo. There's a group, they're wearing shirts from a camp in Easton, Pennsylvania. Was there any connection to Easton that made you include that?
It's funny you should ask. Thank you so much. So I mentioned that I'm lucky enough to own a home in the Catskills. My wife and I were 9/11 refugees. And after 9/11, we had a little bit of money in a savings account. And we just thought, what in the world are we doing with this if we can just be zapped out of the world? So we started looking at properties. And Eastern Pennsylvania is one location where we looked. We looked in Jersey. We looked all over parts of upstate New York. And we just ended up buying here. But I remember Easton very well. We spent a day or even a couple of days knocking around there. And I remember it, and I know it to be relatively easy driving distance from the city. You just cut straight across the state of New Jersey. When I wanted to write about a nearby town, close enough for a bus, a day trip of church students, I just remembered Easton, and I went with that. It was kind of fun.
You talked about the encoding of these letters going to Hoover and other technology that you incorporate into the story that may or may not be real that government agencies use throughout the story. How do you research those topics, those technologies?
Well, another thing that I had some fun with in this story, in part because it's set slightly in the future, not so far into the future that it's a sci-fi novel or a futuristic dystopian novel. But I knew that I could have some fun with certain things that would progress in terms of electronic gadgets and other forms of technology. For example, it opens with drones. The big action scene opens with drones, and drones are very much a part of our lives, very, very much an ongoing technology, but not yet as big a part of our lives as I feel like they're going to be. So I did the same with certain other things, including computers, and I believe I invented a little thing called lens-to-lens networking, where, for example, Mindy, if you had your cell phone set to video and you were showing me your WVIA radio studio, I'd be able to dial in to what your camera is seeing. We don't yet have that, as far as I know, but I think highly possible. As for the government, much of that really is just my own imagination. If you're going to write a thriller, and if it's going to be kind of a conspiratorial thriller that pegs to the natural paranoia we have in our modern-day lives regarding government oversight and internet intruding into our lives, then just go with it. So much of it was warned about for years by great writers. I'm writing novels like 1984 and The Ministry of Fear by Graham Greene. I mean, even Robert Ludlum, who originally authored the Jason Bourne series, now a highly lucrative franchise, he, in his own way, even though he was only writing action thrillers, he was also warning about government overreach with the Jason Bourne franchise. And so I tried to do that and maybe emulate some of what I had read and springboard off of some of what I was inspired by in the forms of Ludlum and George Orwell. For almost 30 years, I worked in broadcast news, and I started early on doing just a little bit of everything as an intern, really, just making the coffee and going to fetch everybody hamburgers at lunch. But when I was laid off during the financial crisis, my title was reporter, and that was after almost 30 years of working principally in radio. I did some television work. Over the years, I did just about every job there was behind the scenes, writer, editor, producer, assignment editor, and then finally reporter and newscaster. It was great fun, and one of the reasons why I wanted to go into it is because I wanted to write, and in broadcasting, at least you're around the written word, just as, of course, with newspapers and magazines. And I wanted to have that opportunity to write, and broadcast writing is a different style. But it was a great career, and when I got laid off, I had the option, really, of just going to pursue freelance work, day shift work, and I had been trying to write and had a couple of manuscripts that I wanted to finish, and instead of doing that, I just decided, all right, go ahead. I'm just going to walk away from my broadcast work and just try to be a fiction writer. And about 8 or 9 years later, my third novel is published. And so it's going pretty well. I'm really pleased with it. And that, too, has been a lot of fun because I really enjoy getting up every morning and just coming to the keyboard. It's what I do. It's not for everybody, but if you like it, it's a great, great opportunity to be a writer.
And what's next? What are you working on now?
I still haven't exactly determined if I'm going to stay with thrillers or what's next. I like other genres, and I read in all genres, even middle grade and young adult. They're a lot of fun. So maybe I'll turn to those eventually, or at least try my hand at a young adult. For now, I'm writing a sequel to Flight of the Fox. Still very much a work in progress, but maybe eventually we'll have something to show my editor at the good publishing company called Down and Out Books, which published Flight of the Fox.
So where can listeners find your books?
Right now it's available as a trade paperback for mail order through all of the internet sites, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Goodreads. Also go to the downandout.com website, which is the publisher. And additionally, it's available for downloading as an ebook through all of those sites. In our area, many copies have been purchased by local libraries, not only in the Northeast Pennsylvania area, but in the southern tier of New York and the Catskill. So they're there. And I've been doing multiple appearances in the area. I haven't been to Pennsylvania yet, but I've been to Jersey and the southern tier of New York. And we're having a lot of fun going to libraries and talking to people about writing and the book in particular, but also the writing in general. So please go to my website. It will offer information on the book and how to buy it and where certain appearances will be in the near-term calendar. But also, one of the things that all readers should be aware of is that if you go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and a website called Goodreads, and log on and review the books that you read, you're doing a great service for all writers. I think it's generally 1 to 5 stars. But this isn't about giving 5 stars. This is just about noting that you read it, because the publishing industry really does look at these websites to see volume of responses. And they don't necessarily look to see how many 5 stars versus how many 1 stars, but they are looking at the volume of response for writers, because readers are important, and this is how they make their voices known. So I'd like to remind readers that if they're inclined to do that, please feel free to do so. It only takes a minute or two.
Thank you very much, Greg.
Thank you so much, Mindy, and thank you to WPIA Radio and Art Scene there. I'm privileged to chat with you. It's been a lot of fun.
Author Gray Bass-Knight speaking with Mindy Kronk, WVIA Production Associate, about Flight of the Fox, his thriller set in part of our general region, and that would be the area around Bethel Woods, the Bethel Woods Center for the Arts in Bethel Woods, New York. We sort of skip over the Pennsylvania border in our broadcast area. He is a resident of Sullivan County, New York, and he set part of his thriller there, as we heard. And if you'd like more information, check his website, and his name is spelled Gray, G-R-A-Y, and Bass-Knight, B-A-S-N-I-G-H-T, B-A-S-N-I-G-H-T. So his website is simply graybassknight.com, and the thriller is Flight of the Fox. And he will be there with a blog and information and links and information about his background and more. GrayBassKnight.com. Many thanks to Mindy Kronk.